Chapter 151. Quite well. Apostrophe, it seemed to reassure the anxious inquirer. He clasped his hands, and, looking upwards with a pious joy, silently expressed his gratitude. He then looked round on the assembled group, and shook his head reproachfully. For such a man severely, quite severely. Oh, vermin! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff. Oh, bloodsuckers! Is it not enough that you have embittered the existence of an individual wholly unparalleled in the biographical records of amiable persons, but must you now, even now, when he has made his election, and reposed his trust in a humble, but at least sincere and disinterested relative, must you now, vermin and swarmers, I regret to make use of these strong expressions, my dear sir, but there are times when honest indignation will not be controlled, must you now, vermin and swarmers, for I will repeat it, take advantage of his unprotected state, assemble round him from all quarters, as wolves and vultures, and other animals of the feathered tribe assemble round, I will not say round carrion or a carcass, for Mr. Chuzzlewit is quite the contrary, but round their prey, to rifle and despoil, gorging their voracious maws, and staining their offensive beaks, with every description of carnivorous enjoyment. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as he stopped to fetch his breath, he waved them off, in a solemn manner, with his hand. Horde of unnatural plunderers and robbers. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he continued. Leave him, I say. Beggin. Abscond. You had better be off. Wander over the face of the earth, young sirs, like vagabonds as you are, and do not presume to remain in a spot which is hallowed by the gray hairs of the patriarchal gentleman to whose tottering limbs I have the honor to act as an unworthy, but I hope an unassuming, prop and staff. And you, my tender sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, addressing himself in a tone of gentle remonstrance to the old man, how could you ever leave me, though even for this short period? You have absented yourself, I do not doubt, upon some act of kindness to me, bless you for it, but you must not do it, you must not be so venturesome. I should really be angry with you if I could, my friend. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he advanced with outstretched arms, to take the old man's hand. But he had not seen how the hand clasped, and clutched the stick within its grasp. As he came smiling on, and got within his reach, old Martin, with his burning indignation crowded into one vehement burst, and flashing out of every line and wrinkle in his face, rose up, and struck him down upon the ground. With such a well-directed nervous blow, that down he went, as heavily and true, as if the charge of a life guardsman had tumbled him out of a saddle. And whether he was stunned by the shock, or only confused by the wonder and novelty of this warm reception, he did not offer to get up again, but lay there, looking about him with a disconcerted meekness in his face so enormously ridiculous, that neither Mark Tapley nor John Westlock could repress a smile, though both were actively interposing, to prevent a repetition of the blow, which the old man's gleaming eyes and vigorous attitude seemed to render one of the most probable events in the world. Drag him away. Take him out of my reach. Apostrophe, said Martin, or I can't help it. The strong restraint I have put upon my hands has been enough to palsy them. I am not master of myself while he is within their range. Drag him away. Apostrophe, seeing that he still did not rise, Mr. Tapley, without any compromise about it, actually did drag him away, and stick him up on the floor, with his back against the opposite wall. Hear me, rascal. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Chuzzlewit. I have summoned you here to witness your own work. I have summoned you here to witness it, because I know it will be gall and wormwood to you. I have summoned you here to witness it, because I know the sight of everybody here must be a dagger in your mean, false heart. What? Do you know me as I am, at last? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff had cause to stare at him, for the triumph in his face, and speech and figure was a sight to stare at. Look there. Apostrophe apostrophe said the old man, pointing at him, and appealing to the rest. Look there. And then come hither, my dear Martin, look here. 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 Apostrophe at every repetition of the word he pressed his grandson closer to his breast. The passion I felt, Martin, when I dared not do this, apostrophe he said, was in the blow I struck just now. Why did we ever part? How could we ever part? How could you ever fly from me to him? Apostrophe, Martin was about to answer, but he stopped him, and went on. The fault was mine no less than yours. Marcus told me so today, and I have known it long, though not so long as I might have done. Mary, my love, come here. Apostrophe, as she trembled, and was very pale, he sat her in his own chair, and stood beside it with her hand in his, and Martin standing by him. The curse of our house, apostrophe said the old man, looking kindly down upon her, has been the love of self, has ever been the love of self. How often have I said so, when I never knew, that I had wrought it upon others? Apostrophe, he drew one hand through Martin's arm, and standing so, between them, proceeded thus. You all know how I bred this orphan up, to tend me. None of you can know by what degrees I have come to regard her as a daughter, for she has won upon me, by her self-forgetfulness, her tenderness, her patience, all the goodness of her nature, when heaven is her witness, that I took but little pains to draw it forth. It blossomed without cultivation, and it ripened without heat. I cannot find it in my heart to say that I am sorry for it now, or yonder fellow might be holding up his head. Apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff put his hand into his waistcoat, and slightly shook that part of him to which allusion had been made, as if to signify that it was still uppermost. There is a kind of selfishness, apostrophe said Martin, I have learned it in my own experience of my own breast which is constantly upon the watch for selfishness in others, and holding others at a distance, by suspicions and distrusts, wonders why they don't approach, and don't confide, and calls that selfishness in them. Thus I once doubted those about me, not without reason in the beginning, and thus I once doubted you, Martin. Apostrophe, not without reason, apostrophe Martin answered either. Apostrophe, listen, hypocrite. Listen, smooth-tongued, servile, crawling knave. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Martin. Listen, you shallow dog. What? When I was seeking him, you had already spread your nets, you were already fishing for him, were ye? When I lay ill in this good woman's house, and your meek spirit pleaded for my grandson, you had already caught him, had ye? Counting on the restoration of the love you knew I bore him, you designed him for one of your two daughters, did ye? Or failing that, you traded in him as a speculation which at any rate, should blind me with the luster of your charity, and found a claim upon me. Why, even then I knew you, and I told you so. Did I tell you, that I knew you, even then? Apostrophe apostrophe, I am not angry, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, softly. I can bear a great deal from you. I will never contradict you, Mr. Chuzzlewit. Apostrophe, observe. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Martin, looking round. I put myself in that man's hands on terms as mean and base, and as degrading to himself, as I could render them in words. I stated them at length to him, before his own children, syllable by syllable, as coarsely as I could, and with as much offense, and with as plain an exposition of my contempt, as words not looks and manner merely could convey. If I had only called the angry blood into his face, I would have wavered in my purpose. If I had only stung him into being a man for a minute, I would have abandoned it. If he had offered me one word of remonstrance, in favor of the grandson whom he supposed I had disinherited, if he had pleaded with me, though never so faintly, against my appeal to him to abandon him to misery and cast him from his house, I think I could have borne with him forever afterwards. But not a word, not a word. Pandering to the worst of human passions was the office of his nature, and faithfully he did his work. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am not angry, apostrophe, observed Mr. Pecksniff. I am hurt, Mr. Chuzzlewit, wounded in my feelings, but I am not angry, my good sir. Apostrophe, Mr. Chuzzlewit resumed. Once resolved to try him, I was resolute to pursue the trial to the end. But while I was bent on fathoming the depth of his duplicity, I made a sacred compact with myself that I would give him credit on the other side for any latent spark of goodness, honor, forbearance, any virtue that might glimmer in him. For first to last there has been no such thing. Not once. He cannot say I have not given him opportunity. He cannot say I have ever led him on. He cannot say I have not left him freely to himself in all things, or that I have not been a passive instrument in his hands, which he might have used for good as easily as evil. Or if he can, he lies. And that's his nature too. Apostrophe, Mr. Chuzzlewit, apostrophe, interrupted Pecksniff, shedding tears. I am not angry, sir. I cannot be angry with you. But did you never, my dear sir, express a desire that the unnatural young man who by his wicked arts has estranged your good opinion from me, for the time being, only for the time being, that your grandson, Mr. Chuzzlewit, should be dismissed my house? Recollect yourself, my Christian friend. Apostrophe, I have said so, have I not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted the old man, sternly. I could not tell how far your specious hypocrisy had deceived him, knave, and knew no better way of opening his eyes than by presenting you before him in your own servile character. Yes, I did express that desire, and you leaped to meet it, and you met it, and turning in an instant on the hand you had licked and beslivered, as only such hounds can, you strengthened, and confirmed, and justified me in my scheme. Apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff made a bow, a submissive, not to say a groveling, and an abject bow. If he had been complimented on his practice of the loftiest virtues, he never could have bowed as he bowed then. The wretched man who has been murdered, apostrophe, Mr. Chuzzlewit went on to say, then passing by the name of apostrophe, Tig, apostrophe, suggested Mark of Tig. Brought begging messages to me on behalf of a friend of his, and an unworthy relative of mine, and finding him a man well enough suited to my purpose, I employed him to glean some news of you, Martin, for me. It was from him I learned that you had taken up your abode with yonder fellow. It was he who, meeting you here in town, one evening, you remember where? Apostrophe, apostrophe, at the pawnbroker's shop, apostrophe, said Martin. Yes. Watched you to your lodging, and enabled me to send you a banknote. Apostrophe, I little thought, apostrophe, said Martin, greatly moved, that it had come from you. I little thought that you were interested in my fate. If I had, apostrophe, if you had, apostrophe, returned the old man, sorrowfully, you would have shown less knowledge of me as I seemed to be, and as I really was. I hoped to bring you back, Martin. Penitent and humbled. I hoped to distress you into coming back to me. Much as I loved you, I had that to acknowledge which I could not reconcile it to myself to avow then, unless you made submission to me first. Thus it was I lost you. If I have had, indirectly, any actor part in the fate of that unhappy man, by putting means, however small, within his reach, heaven forgive me. I might have known, perhaps, that he would misuse money, that it was ill bestowed upon him, and that sown by his hands it could engender mischief only. But I never thought of him at that time as having the disposition or ability to be a serious impostor, or otherwise than as a thoughtless, idle-humored, dissipated spendthrift, sinning more against himself than others, and frequenting low haunts and indulging vicious tastes, to his own ruin only. Apostrophe, begging your pardon, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Tapley, who had Mrs. Lupin on his arm by this time, quite agreeably, if I may make so bold as say so, my opinion is, as he was quite correct, and that he turned out perfectly natural for all that. There's surprise a number of men, sir, who as long as they've only got their own shoes and stockings to depend upon, will walk downhill, along the gutters quiet enough and by themselves, and not do much harm. But set any on them up with a coach and horses, sir, and it's wonderful what a knowledge of driving he'll show, and how he'll fill his vehicle with passengers, and start off in the middle of the road, neck or nothing, to the devil. Bless your heart, sir, there's ever so many ticks a passing this here temple gate any hour in the day, that only want a chance, to turn out full-blown Montagues every one. ... your ignorance, as you call it, Mark, ... said Mr. Chuzzlewit, is wiser than some men's enlightenment, and mine among them. You are right, not for the first time today. Now hear me out, my dears. And hear me, you, who, if what I have been told be accurately stated, are bankrupt in pocket no less than in good name. And when you have heard me, leave this place, and poison my sight no more. ... Mr. Pecksniff laid his hand upon his breast, and bowed again. The penance I have done in this house, ... said Mr. Chuzzlewit, has earned this reflection with it constantly, above all others. That if it had pleased heaven, to visit such infirmity on my old age as really had reduced me to the state in which I feigned to be, I should have brought its misery upon myself. Oh, you whose wealth, like mine, has been a source of continual unhappiness, leading you to distrust the nearest and dearest, and to dig yourself a living grave of suspicion and reserve. Take heed that, having cast off all whom you might have bound to you, and tenderly, you do not become in your decay the instrument of such a man as this, and waken in another world to the knowledge of such wrong as would embitter heaven itself, if wronger you could ever reach it. ... And then he told them, how he had sometimes thought, in the beginning, that love might grow up between Mary and Martin, and how he had pleased his fancy with the picture of observing it when it was new, and taking them to task, apart, in counterfeited doubt, and then confessing to them, that it had been an object dear to his heart, and by his sympathy with them, and generous provision for their young fortunes, establishing a claim on their affection and regard which nothing should wither, and which should surround his old age with means of happiness. How in the first dawn of this design, and when the pleasure of such a scheme for the happiness of others was new, and indistinct within him, Martin had come to tell him, that he had already chosen for himself, knowing that he, the old man, had some faint project on that head, but ignorant whom it concerned. How it was little comfort to him to know that Martin had chosen her, because the grace of his design was lost, and because finding that she had returned his love, he tortured himself with the reflection that they, so young, to whom he had been so kind a benefactor, were already like the world, and bent on their own selfish, stealthy ends. How in the bitterness of this impression, and of his past experience, he had reproached Martin so harshly, forgetting that he had never invited his confidence on such a point, and confounding what he had meant to do with what he had done, that high words sprung up between them, and they separated in wrath. How he loved him still, and hoped he would return. How on the night of his illness at the Dragon, he had secretly written tenderly of him, and made him his heir, and sanctioned his marriage with Mary, and how, after his interview with Mr. Pecksniff, he had distrusted him again, and burnt the paper to ashes, and had lain down in his bed distracted by suspicions, doubts, and regrets. And then he told them how, resolved to probe this Pecksniff, and to prove the constancy and truth of Mary to himself no less than. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.